Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Our week-long farewell to President Bush 41 comes to an end today. It came to an end in Houston yesterday, at least for the formal ceremonial part of it. And I know the Oak Ridge boys followed up with Ronan Tynan.
Did you see?
I was hoping for Elvira, but we got Amazing Grace instead.
Did you see that beard? I mean, have you ever seen anything? I wanted to just see if there's any like anything in there.
ZZ Top. I mean, the same guy from the Oak Ridge boys for the last 30 years.
No, I know. Yeah. But, you know, you kind of forget about them and then you see them. And they were pretty, you know what? They were pretty good. They sang, well, I'll let you listen for yourself.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound.
Yeah.
What do you think?
They're great. Huh? I love the baritone I've always had.
Pretty good?
I mean, so it's interesting. It's a broad range, and I think I like it. I like the fact that a broad range of musical taste from Ronan Tynan to the Oak Ridge Boys over 2 days. I like it.
Yeah, and it was Jeb was supposed to speak, but he didn't. James Baker, his best friend. And again, I mean, every time he speaks, of course, I cry.
We rejoice, Mr. President, that you are safely tucked in now and through the ages with God's loving arms around you. Because our glory, George, was to have had you as our president. And as such a friend.
Yeah. The fun part about yesterday's eulogy by W was talking about how Jim Baker used to sneak in Grey Goose and a steak from Morton's when H.W. was in the hospital.
And then the Reverend at the National Cathedral, the Reverend talked about how James Baker, on his last few hours on this earth, rubbed his feet. And he compared it to the disciples washing, in Jesus washing the disciples' feet. So that was beautiful.
I've always been proud that George Bush used to describe our relationship as one of big brother and little brother. He used to say that one of the things he liked best about me was that I would always tell him what I thought, even when I knew he didn't want to hear it. Then we would have a spirited discussion about that issue. But he had a very effective way of letting me know when the discussion was over. He would look at me and he'd say, Baker, if you're so smart, why am I president and you're not? He was a leader and he knew it.
That was great.
And from the family, we had, of course, W yesterday and other representatives of the family that did readings. And we had George P. I mean,
there's so many.
Wednesday, but we had George P. yesterday.
Yeah, George Prescott. He's the land commissioner in Texas, don't you know? Looks like Jeb. Sounds a little like Jeb, but well, just decide for yourself.
In a typical day, he'd wake up around 5 a.m. to review security briefings and grab his first coffee of the day. When the coast was clear, all the grandkids would try our best to snag a spot on the bed and nestle up between him and Ganny while they read the paper. We all grew up in awe of my grandfather, a larger-than-life figure who he'd catch fly fishing off the rocks in Maine, talking up where the bluefish were running. He would be the first to host intense horseshoe matchups among family, Secret Service, or any willing head of state, while encouraging trash talk like power outage if your horseshoe was short, or Woodrow Wilson if you're long and your shoe hit the wooden backstop. His typical spread included barbecue, tacos, tamales, pork rinds with hot sauce, with a healthy complement of Bluebell ice cream and Klondike bars. Always the competitor, each night, Gampy challenged all of the grandkids to the coveted First to Sleep Award.
I think that's why, because if you have kids, and I know you're just starting out as a parent, Dan, but the, hey, we'll give an award for who gets to go to sleep first. Mike knows what I'm talking about. It's a great coveted award.
And you got the diet to live to 94, too, from George P.
Yeah. So it was, and it was beautiful. Then they took, you know, his pallbearers were his Secret Service detail. And that's what he wanted. And I thought that was not, in, you know, not in D.C. for the state funeral, but yesterday I thought that was, that said a lot about him as a man. And all the people in Houston just loved him. So then they took his casket to a train that they painted to look like Air Force One. And they took him via train to College Station. It's about 90-minute trip. And they cut out on both sides so you could see his flag-draped casket. And people lined up by the thousands. And it was really just, I mean, all walks of life were out there. And it was raining out, too, so it wasn't a pleasant day. But it was a beautiful send-off. And he'll be buried next to Barbara and his daughter.
And the other thing that was cool was the missing man formation from the Air Force, the largest ever, 21 planes in honor of George Herbert Walker Bush.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Tis the season for giving. That's what we're doing here at AM 560 The Answer. It's our annual Food for the Poor campaign to raise money for those less fortunate during the holiday season. And just know that when you do donate to Food for the Poor by going to 560theanswer.com/food, 95 cents of your dollar goes directly to those in need. It really is amazing. And here's what your donations can buy if you're thinking about donating. Here's Todd Chapman with Food for the Poor.
So an $80 one-time gift of Food for the Poor would provide one starving child in Haiti with two meals a day through one of our feeding programs for the next year. So it's food for a year. And then part of every gift of $80 goes to help build one of these permanent water solutions that Paul was talking about. Dan, we're not trucking in water. You're helping to build a water well or a solar-powered water purification unit. They pump out 10,000 gallons of water a day, which services an entire community, and it's going to last 30 or 40 years. So, you know, even if we were saying $80 would provide one of these people with water for life, I think that would be an amazing opportunity. But now you've got the food and the water together. $80, I mean, you know, come on. I just dropped almost 80 bucks on the turkey that we're going to have for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
We had them in right before the Thanksgiving holiday.
That infrastructure piece is really important. These are sustainable solutions that Food for the Poor is bringing to the table. So, yes, we're focused on raising the money to provide food for a year, water for life for 3,000 children this holiday season. That's our goal. And they're doing this program with other Salem stations around the country. But the real play here is changing the landscape of Haiti for these families for generations.
It's a long-term project. It's a long-term effort. It's interesting, 2 years ago when Amy and the team went to Savan Kabrit, that community that you visited, the community where mothers called the water source the gutter. Now, we have a term when we call, when we say the gutter here, and it's the lowest of lows. But this is where people basically obtain water to drink, water to cook with, water to bathe their small children. Now, because of the efforts and the results from Chicagoland listeners to the AM 560 campaign with Food for the Poor, that community has completely transformed. There are families that have been literally upended from their poverty into a place that they could only dream of. Children whose families, who basically in their family, rather, didn't eat every single day. And now, because Food for the Poor and AM 560 donors and listeners to this campaign just in the last couple of years have transformed that community long term and self-sustainability. We're talking about families that not only have homes, they have food to eat, they have resources, they have access to clean, safe water. Just think about it. You know, this morning I had a bottle of water right next to my bedside. I left, and I have right next to me the bottle of water that I still have half drunk. If it stays in the car too long, we end up dumping it. We take for granted things like water. But these are families who long-term have a real solution to water. And the amazing part is we have the opportunity now with listeners' help to do that for yet another community in Haiti.
So again, a one-time donation, $80. Here's a number that you can call, 844-862-HOPE. That's 844-862-4673, or simply go to 560theanswer.com/food.
And we're also providing, again, the opportunity for business leaders who listen to be donor leaders on this endeavor. It's our business benefactor program that works like this. You make a $2,500 tax-deductible donation to Food for the Poor, and as a thank you from us to profile your business, get a little return on your venture philanthropy, if you will, is we provide 40, 60-second ads for your business on these airwaves to run Monday to Friday, primetime broadcast hours, 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. The way you enroll in that program is call our sales manager, Anjanette, at 847-472-8951. Again,
you memorized the number.
Oh, yeah, I got it. 847-472-8951. That's Anjanette. I can memorize. I'm not like a cell phone slave. I know phoners. I know your phone number. I know your cell
number
by memory.
Well, okay. I know the call-in number, 642-5600.
That's excellent.
I mean, baby steps, right?
Yeah.
Very good. But you're a number guy, huh?
Yeah.
Good with the math and science there, aren't you?
Yeah.
I'm
a STEM guy, yes, but I appreciate the fact that you're always recognized more of a Renaissance man, generally. Yes.
Is that on your dating profile? I'm a STEM guy. Yeah.
If such a thing existed.
Again, you want to become a business benefactor. And thanks to all the companies that have, you know, the slots are filling up quickly. So do this today rather than wait over the weekend. If you have any questions, just call her. Thanks to Palatine Complete Dental, AmericanEagle.com, Signature Bank, just to name a few. And call Anjanette, 847-472-8951.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, with Bush 41 Services this week is passing into services. A lot of things have been queued up that we haven't gotten to. We need to because they're important. For example, Hawaii Senator Mazie Hirono, you remember her from such travesties as the Kavanaugh confirmation hearing.
That ghastly woman.
When she speaks, she is the E.F. Hutton of the Senate. She is a dizzying intellect. She has a lot of important things to say. And she's explaining why this week, why Democrats have a difficult time connecting with certain voters out there on the hustings. And Tom Perez provided some echoing of her sentiments, the potty mouth DNC chairman. Just to refresh your memory, we're talking about with Mazie Hirono.
To cover my ears.
This is a woman of letters. This is a deep thinker. This is somebody with a profound intellect. And so listen up. And again, just to evidence to support my claim, here's Mazie Hirono during the Kavanaugh catastrophe.
Of course it helps that there are women on that committee. But you know what? I expect the men in this country and the men in this committee, and many of them, believe me, because we all signed on to this letter to demand an FBI investigation. But really, guess who's perpetuating all of these kinds of actions? It's the men in this country. And I just want to say to the men in this country, just shut up and step up. Do the right thing for a change. Okay, you can see I'm a little upset by this, you know.
I mean, did I say courageous? I didn't need to because there's the evidence of it.
It still makes me sick every time I hear it. Shut up. Step up.
For a change. And then, again, wondering aloud why people like Mazie Hirono have a hard time connecting with people who don't live in Hawaii. Mazie Hirono this week.
She doesn't connect with Hawaiians. When I was there, I said, do you understand that the whole country is laughing at your senator? And they said, well, we know she used to have this job, and then nobody else is running, so she got this job. I'm like, well, you might not want to vote for her next time around, okay?
Well, here's her latest offering this week about the problem Democrats have. Not only too courageous, too smart. Too smart. The focus on evidence-based reasoning rather than emotional appeals. That's the problem, according to Hirono.
What is the thing Democrats need to say to help voters bump this from issue number 14 up to issue number 1?
I wish I had the answer to that, because one of the things that we Democrats have a really hard time is connecting to people's hearts instead of here. We're really good at shoving out all the information that touch people here but not here. And I have been saying at all of our Senate Democratic retreats that we need to speak to the heart, not in a manipulative way, that brings forth everybody's fears and resentments, but truly to speak to the heart so that people know that we're actually on their side. We have a really hard time doing that. And one of the reasons that it was told to me at one of our retreats was that we Democrats know so much. That is true. And we have to kind of tell everybody how smart we are. Yeah. And so we have a tendency to be very left brain. And we think this, really, that is not how people make decisions.
Mm. Yeah. The left is too logical, too focused on presenting data, information, arguments, doesn't do enough to appeal to people's emotions. I tell you, if there's any reason not to be a Democrat, it's so that you don't have to go on retreats with Mazie Hirono. But this is seriously what she is saying, which in it is in itself an emotional appeal. We're too smart. We're too fact-based.
We don't go from the heart.
Is that what you think about Democrats? That you're not voting for Democrats because they're too smart. They're too esoteric. They're too focused on sterile logic and data and evidence-based arguments. That's the real problem. If they would tug at your heartstrings just a little bit, not in a manipulative way, you might consider them. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. I find that to be a rather remarkable statement. And gosh, I don't know if she actually believes that or...
She sounds desperate.
Or she has been trotted out to be the one to continue to manipulate, to shore up what who the Democrats truly are not.
Well, now that Maxine Waters is still in a timeout, I think Mazie Hirono has gotten way too much airtime.
She's stepping up.
Yeah,
she's stepping up to fill that vacuum.
Yeah, filling the gap.
Tom Perez, he's the DNC chairman, he has identified another problem Democrats have in terms of reaching some of those swing voters in key states that they need to reach in order to be successful nationally.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
He was speaking at some political activist group, Demand Justice, and he complained. I mean, these guys, nobody is better at projecting than the left. Complained about the media. The problem is the media is biased against the left.
The left.
Because of Fox News and Sinclair exist. Pay no attention to the D.C. press corps or all of their big city outposts. No, no, no. The Democrats treated unfairly by the media because Fox News and Sinclair have big megaphones. That's number one. Okay, so he's complaining about the media bias. Then he also said this. It should come as no surprise to no one that person, and the person will be obvious, has elevated the issue of courts to the top because that person on the pulpit is saying, ignore everything else that this person has done and is doing. We have to focus on one issue of Roe v. Wade, and people buy it because that's their only source. Again, he's not particularly great rhetorician, but it should come as a surprise to no one that person, Trump, has elevated the issue of courts to the top because that person, Trump, Trump flacks from the pulpit. That person on the pulpit is saying, ignore everything else that this person has done and is doing. We have to focus on one issue of Roe v. Wade and people buy it because that's their only source. So the other problem, that Tom Perez has identified with Democrats' messaging is clergy. So the clergy are a problem, despite, frankly, the clergy being largely left-wing, too. But okay, the clergy is a problem, and you attending mass or church service or synagogue to hear from clergy is a problem because that's your only source of information. You see, Tom Perez has identified a real problem for the left, which is if people attend church, it puts a real crimp in their goal of making the state your God.
Oh.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Are you willing to, you know, I mean, look, is that too so much to ask? Give up your faith, or at least the routine of expressing it by attending service so that the Democrats can get back in power? I mean, I don't think that's a lot to ask.
Just something that we've done since the day we were baptized.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah. No, I'm going to pass.
Yeah. I mean, reform.
Giving up my faith.
Isn't Des Miller, Reform Judaism is the Democrat Party with holidays? I mean, what, you know, you go to Our Lady of Black Lives Matter. What's the difference?
Stop.
Right?
No, it's All Saints Episcopal Church.
Right.
And they still have also the Black Lives Matter. But now that I found out my kids are little African American, their lives matter all that much more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was the best, though, when they realized that, you know, we got our DNA test back. And they were in church with me when I was telling them about it. And they looked at the sign. They're like, look, Mom, my life matters now. And then the sun came out. And it was piercing through the brand new stained glass windows, shining upon Peyton and Eli as they took to get on their robes to be a clown.
Well, I think your church would be exempt from what Tom Perez is saying because they dutifully recite DNC talking points.
They do. Every Sunday.
No, you've told
every
us.
Sunday, I know. That's all right.
I mean,
I'd like to have the Republican rebuttal to the sermon. That was my idea. Like, can I have a difference? You know, guess what it was last week? The woman carrying the two kids in her diapers that were getting tear gassed at the border, saying she's just, you know, she's politically persecuted in her country. No, she's a single mom with five kids who just wants a job. That's the facts.
Well,
don't let the facts get in the way of a good story, or a good sermon.
I'm sure secular churches like yours, contradiction in terms, but okay, it would be exempt from what Tom Perez is saying. But for those of you who are attending services where issues of life and death are tackled from a biblical perspective, I'm sorry. We just can't have that if you want to create heaven on earth by electing Democrats to national office.
Too many voters are influenced by the pulpit.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a real problem. Influenced by the pulpit, obviously the right-wing media that dominates the landscape, Fox News and Sinclair.
Yes.
And then, of course, you got this other problem of Democrats being too smart and too level-headed, not emotional enough, so they're not connecting to people. So that's sort of a double whammy for Democrats there. Boy, these two really have their finger on the pulse. Craig in Mount Greenwood, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, hey, Dan and Amy. I think Mejirano must have been part of that original Choom gang blowing dope in that van with Obama and everything. The only thing she never stopped. She kept going because she's really messed up the way she talks to people and the way she acts there. That's all I got to say.
Craig, in the immortal words of Maisie Hirano, I wish you would just shut up and do the right thing for a change, you ugly American man.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, Mike Scott was reporting at the bottom of the hour on the news, but this is kind of a fun potential pick for attorney general that has been reported by the Washington Post.
Not Chris Christie.
No, William Barr, who is H.W. Bush's attorney general from 91 to 93, according to the Washington Post and the Daily Beast also confirming it through their unnamed sources. William Barr, the leading candidate to be the attorney general choice of President Trump. I like that. I like it steers away from the Giulianis and the Christies.
Yes.
I also like it because of the things William Barr has said. Like, I don't think all the stuff about throwing Clinton in jail or jumping into the conclusion she should be prosecuted is appropriate. But I do think there are things that should be investigated that haven't been investigated. And Barr said specifically that there was a basis to investigate Hillary Clinton for Uranium One. To the extent it is not pursuing these matters, the Department of Justice is abdicating its responsibility, said Barr, and to New York Times last year. Interesting, boy, after the press pretending that they were always respectful and fair to George H.W. Bush on the occasion of his passing this week, wouldn't it be a nice little piece of jujitsu for Trump to elevate his former attorney general to be attorney general again? Because he comes to the table with
a lot of experience
and a lot of respect across the partisan divide. Lindsey Graham saying this would be an easy confirmation if Barr was President Trump's nominee.
And we're just receiving word from CNN. There was talk yesterday that President Trump would name former Fox News host Heather Nauert, am I pronouncing her last name? Nauert, as UN ambassador. So CNN is confirming that he's going to be doing that today. I don't know, about her experience in the international diplomacy department, but Michael Bolton and Pompeo are trying to downgrade the U.S. ambassadorship so that it's not a cabinet-level position. So they're working on Trump to try to, or whoever they have to work on, but they suggested that yesterday to make it a non-cabinet-level position.
Well, the U.S. ambassador, Nauert is also importantly right now the PIO or the spokesman for the State Department.
And she's done a great job. I think. Compared to Cagney and Lacey who were there.
Well, yeah.
My gosh. That was romper room hour. I see CNN. I see Fox.
You know, I don't want to discount a PR flack being elevated to a leadership position because, I was a PR flack that ran for governor. So I want to assess based on talent, but
I think she might have a hard time getting Senate confirmation. I'm just saying.
I don't know about that. I think probably Republicans will give the president the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. that he wants, barring something that is, egregious in terms of her performance or her background. Performance, I mean, during a confirmation hearing or her background. There's not a lot of evidence to suggest that at this point. But, in the post-Kavanaugh era, who knows?
Maybe she did something in high school.
But here's the thing. I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of people that do have deep geopolitical knowledge and diplomatic successes. Boy, I don't know about her for that choice. I think that's a bit of a reach.
He's doing it, though.
I'm not worked up about it. But is that the best available choice, talent-wise, or sort of in that echelon?
I think he could dig a little deeper.
I'd say William Barr is. I don't know about, I like her and all that, but
it
may be a reach. We'll see how that works out.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Look, I think we can all agree that Kevin Hart's career should come to an end. The disagreement comes in.
A very special Dan and Amy.
The disagreement is whether it should come to an end because of his tweets or because of movies like Get Hard and Central Intelligence. I am in the latter camp.
Well, he made up for himself.
But Hollywood is in the former camp.
Jumanji, I thought, saved his career.
Jumanji. Yeah.
That was a great movie. Did you see it yet?
No.
Oh, it's so good. Perfect movie to see with your fictitious children.
Yeah. Kevin Hart named to host the Oscars and stepped down from being named to host the Oscars over controversies regarding tweets from years ago that were allegedly homophobic.
Yeah, well, one of the tweets I know from 10 years ago, and by the way, this all happened within the past, he was named to host, he was so excited, he called his mom because his mom said, oh, your dream has come true, this is amazing. This has all happened within 36 hours. One of the tweets, Stan, from 10 years ago was saying that he would act violently toward his son if he found out he was gay. So that didn't sit well with the LGBTQ
the tweet
community.
Yo, if my son comes home and tries to play with my daughter's dollhouse, I'm going to break it over his head and say in my voice, stop, that's gay. Another tweet. This is actually from his stand-up.
Okay.
He's apparently a stand-up comedian, too. One of my biggest fears is my son growing up and being gay. That's a fear. keep in mind, I'm not homophobic. I have nothing against gay people. Do what you want to do. But me, being a heterosexual male, if I can prevent my son from being gay, I will. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. What offends you more, Kevin Hart's movies or Kevin Hart's tweets? Take your calls on that.
And then matters were made a little worse when he made an Instagram video yesterday that pretty much said, my team calls me. Oh, my God. Everyone's upset by tweets you did years ago, he said. And then he's like, guys, I'm nearly 40 years old. If you don't believe that people change, grow, evolve as they get older, I don't know what to tell you. If you want to hold people in a position where they always have to justify the past, do you? Then I'm the wrong guy, the wrong man. And I don't know if that made things, they said it made things worse. And then after that, then he said he's stepping down as the Oscar host.
Well, I will give him credit for that, because that's a thoughtful statement. It's true. And it's absolutely a fair pushback from Kevin Hart against the barbarian hordes.
I mean, should you be held accountable for something that you did 10 years ago? And he's a comedian, too. I always think that, like, Roseanne Barr, I'm still upset about that. That was so stupid that they took her off her show, which is tanking, by the way, because of something stupid that she said on Twitter. Mm-hmm. She's a comedian. They're provocative. They push the envelope. They poke the bear.
If you think, oh, well, those were intemperate tweets or comments in a stand-up comedy routine. Context is important here. And so he should face some sort of professional punishment for the tweets and the stand-up comedy, setting up jokes about his son's sexuality, whatnot. Just remember the road you're going down. Because there are plenty of examples of them. We try to give them here so that people understand these things don't happen in isolation and they understand the ripple effect, or really what's become more than ripple. Tidal waves. Let me give you another example. Saturday Night Live writer and comedian Nimesh Patel kicked off stage by Columbia University students on Friday night halfway through his performance because students found his jokes offensive.
So when did they get so much power? They're customers. If they don't like it, this is what you do. You leave. You don't think that you can kick an artist off the stage?
Well, the organizers of the event.
So still, well, a gig's a gig.
I'm just telling you.
All right.
Charity performance hosted by the university's Asian American Alliance, and they bring an Asian American named Nimesh Patel, who's a writer for Saturday Night Live. And
what was the joke that offended everybody?
It's just, I just want to just make sure that sinks in, who this is, you know, what this is. And the implications, I hope they're obvious. The goal of the event to provide a platform for diversity of Asian American artistic expression. Well, diversity within range, clearly. Members of the student group found Patel's skit offensive, specifically when the comedian joked that being gay cannot be a choice, adding that if a man is both black and gay, quote, no one looks in the mirror and thinks this black thing is too easy. Let me just add another thing to it.
Am I bad that I'm laughing at that?
No.
I think that's funny.
Well, not if you kneel at the altar of intersectionality. The response, they pulled him off stage.
Off stage in the middle of his show?
Patel protests, explain he's just simply familiarizing students with the real world from his perspective. This is the student group. Columbia, Ivy League. We deeply apologize for inviting Patel in the first place and bringing these comments into a space for inclusion and acceptance. We apologize for the hurt his words caused members of the community, adding that members of the student group were still processing what happened. What just happened? What
Wait
just
till
happened?
They have a real tragedy in their life. They're not going to be prepared to handle it or process it. Because they're going to fall like a stack of rocks
to the
ground.
Andrew Sullivan said we're all on a college campus now. America's one big college campus. America's one big bawling drum circle.
Dear Lord.
So Nimesh Patel, should he have his, should he be kicked off of Saturday Night Live because of this controversy at Columbia University? And remember, the reason that you have academics of a leftist perspective, Jonathan Haidt and others, this heterodox movement, is because of the totalitarianism that is taking hold on the campus. The thoughtlessness. A friend of mine, he's got a freshman daughter at Yale.
Yeah.
He forwarded this tweet to me that she had sent him. And it's, you know, and he's squared away. And so not surprising, his daughter squared away. She's like, I can't believe the students around here. She's talking about Yale. They don't know anything. They don't know anything about movies or books or art or history. They don't know anything. They're all just sort of political operatives in training is what she didn't say that. I'm interpreting what she's saying. And when she said movies, I'm not talking about what's in theaters. I'm not talking about Kevin Hart movies. I mean movies as an expression of art and culture. Like, she's like, they don't know anything.
Okay.
That's a pretty strong statement coming from a freshman at Yale about her peers. It should be a pretty jarring statement. Dave in Lamont, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good show as usual.
Thanks.
Hey, you know, I don't know much about Kevin Hart, but the guy, he apologized. Right there is a problem. He never should have apologized because, as I understand it, the context of what he said was something about his little son, 3 years old. And if the little son started playing with his sister's toys or dollhouse or whatever, no, he's not going to have that. And, you know, that's his right as a parent to decide for his children how they play and to direct their lives as he sees fit as their father. These people can stick it. Stop apologizing. Got to give them some pitchforks in return.
Thanks for the call, Dave. Well, here's the other thing just about this, too. So to Dave's point, he wasn't giving a policy speech. He wasn't before the Supreme Court in the Obergefell case. He was doing a stand-up comedy routine, for goodness sake. So context and tone matters, too.
And before he apologized, he released this video on Instagram.
So I just got a call from the Academy, and that call basically said, Kevin, apologize for your tweets of old, or we're going to have to move on and find another host. Talking about the tweets from 2009, 2010. I chose to pass. I passed on the apology. The reason why I passed is because I've addressed this several times. This is not the first time this has come up. I've addressed it. I've spoken on it. I've said where the rights and wrongs were. I've said who I am now versus who I was then. I've done it. I'm not going to continue to go back and tap into the days of old when I moved on and I'm in a completely different space in my life. The same energy that went into finding those old tweets could be the same energy put into finding the response to the questions that have been asked years after years after years. We feed in the internet trolls and we reward them. I'm not going to do it, man. I'm going to be me. I'm going to stay in my ground. Regardless, Academy, I'm thankful and appreciative of the opportunity. If it goes away, no harm, no foul.
So then after that, then he had, he says that he stepped down, but I think that they are like, well, if you're not going to apologize, you're not going to get the gig.
Whatever they want to do, they're cowards. And we already knew that going in.
Yep.
The phone call was an expression of their cowardice.
What do you think of that post?
I have a lot more respect for Kevin Hart after hearing that. I still don't like him as a comedian or actor. I don't really get it. I don't understand his career. It's like Carson Daly. I don't understand
some of these
careers. I mean, it's just they're mystifying to me. But I'll tell you what, that's an adult male standing up and holding his ground. I've addressed it. I've admitted where I was wrong, or certainly I could understand where people took it in an offensive way. And sometimes as a comedian, you're going to cross the line. And so I walked it back. That's not, you know, that's 10 years old. And that's not something I do today. That's not the way I'd approach these topics today. And so if that's not good enough for you, then get somebody else.
God bless
him. The hell with it.
I know. Good for him.
Brian in Oak Forest, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. I personally have no problem with Kevin Hart, but one thing that does offend me as anti-snowflake is Bill Cosby still has shows on TV. So why is Roseanne kicked off, but convicted felon Bill Cosby still on the air? So that's all I got. Bye.
Thanks for the call, Brian. Did the reruns of the Cosby Show and Fat Albert stuff are still on some of the networks?
No, I thought they yanked those all.
I don't know.
No, they yanked it from my TV. Or Me TV, whatever that is.
Yeah, so. Pretend like you don't know. Tom in Oswego, you're on Chicago's Morning
Channel
Answer.
52.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And your friend's daughter's comments about jail really hit home. I heard that. I have two sons, one in a college in Naperville, but my oldest son is in law school. He's in a college out west in Illinois. You probably know it. And
we can talk about it.
I think I know the college in Naperville,
Western?
Too. I mean, there's only one of them. So,
okay,
yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, all right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
My oldest is in law school, and it was hard for him to get in. It was difficult. He got in. He's so proud. And then once he got in, he used the comments to me regularly. Dad, you can't believe the emptiness of a lot of these students. And they can read a book. They can take a test. But that's about it.
Yeah.
And he's not struggling. He's doing well. But I think he's struggling dealing with the other students and the professors who are all left-leaning, just incredibly so.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Tom. You know, it's I would give the advice to, like, your son that Nixon gave to people who want to enter politics. You want a friend in politics, get a dog. If you want a friend at some of these universities and you're level-headed and intellectually curious and open-minded, you're going to have to get one off college campus or of a canine variety. Candace in Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin. Hello, Candace.
To Kevin Hart, I'm not a big fan of him either. I think he's kind of silly, but I totally agree with him. I have a friend who's a nurse, and what's happening, I read this article, and it was talking about how trans kids in the high schools and stuff are trying to groom other kids to be trans. This is in a British Guardian article, I believe. So my husband and I have been talking about adopting some foster kids, possibly, because I can't stand the thought of these kids languishing or going with in a bad home or going into a pedophile home. And there's just too many of them because of opiates, and there's tons of them. And God help the teacher who tries to tell my kid, my future child, that it's okay to be trans, or doesn't tell me that he wants to be trans and lets him dress as a girl. God help that teacher, that future teacher, because I will be so fierce about stuff like that. There's no way I'm going to allow that to be in the house or even entertain that kind of stuff. It's crazy. But that is what they're saying, is that the trans kids are starting to groom the other kids, which is unbelievable.
Thanks.
Well, there's been grooming
the call,
going
Candace.
On for a long time.
That's a great segue yeah. to a grandfather who confronted a teacher about his grandson being put into a dress. We're going to get to that story.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Have a little spare change in your pocket this holiday season, thinking, you know, I did well this year at my company. I did well this year at my job. Maybe you have a Christmas bonus check. Well, if you do, we want to tell you how to spend your money.
Yeah, sure.
We would like you to make a one-time donation of $80 to Food for the Poor. With that, you will feed a child for 1 year and provide clean water for life. Make a donation on behalf of your well-fed children or grandchildren. If you're, you know, it would make a great gift to tell someone, look, instead of giving you something this year, you know, that you don't care about, just more junk in your house, instead of that, I have made a donation in your name. And you can do that. Call 844-862-HOPE. That's 844-862-HOPE. Christmas came early for you, Dan, because I made a donation in your honor.
Did you? I made a donation in your honor when I spent more than $80 on breakfast from Denny's this morning for the crew. So I guess I could just, you know, pick it up from there. That's fair enough. Also, our business benefactor program. This is a way for our successful entrepreneurs to provide donor leadership, and we appreciate it if you do.
Yes.
The way this program works, $2,500 tax-deductible donation you make on behalf of your business to Food for the Poor. And then we give you, as a thank you, 40, 60-second commercials to run on our airwaves during the week, prime broadcast hours, 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. The way you enroll in this program, call our sales manager, Ann Jeanette, 847-472-8951. Again, 847-472-8951. Ann Jeanette is her name, and enrolling you is her game. And again, the what we're providing in gratitude has a higher market value than the donation you're making.
Yeah, I mean, nowhere in Chicagoland radio can you, for $2,500, get 40, that's 40, 40, 60-second commercials that we could voice. You could voice them as the owner of your company.
You may be able to get that deal at, like, WCPT. Because the leftist talk, nobody's listening. So
right. Yeah. But here, I mean, the like-minded listeners, we like to support fellow-minded companies, that's for sure. Tom Sudeikis started out as a business benefactor, and look where he is today. Hoity-toity, rich guy, Sigma Chi, having Mike Gallagher come in and do a show from Precision Payroll. That's a big deal. So his company started out small. He's the owner or proprietor and said, you know what, I'll try this radio thing. And look where he is today. So give us a chance. Try it out. Even if you have any questions, just call Anjanette. She will answer your questions for you. Again, 847-472-8951. These slots are being filled quickly, so don't wait any longer. Do it today before your weekend. Make sure you call Anjanette.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. When in loco parentis is in loco. This story about a grandfather who went to grade school to confront a kindergarten teacher who put his grandson in a dress without his knowledge, much less permission.
What was it, for a play or something, or
no,
a pageant?
It was for mainstreaming gender as a choice. It was political.
I don't appreciate you encouraging him to put on no dress for the second day, too. I don't appreciate that. And don't think this is going away. I'm going further with this.
Okay, you can go down and talk
to the chair. Not done talking to you. I'm letting you know the next time that you put any kid in a dress, we're going to make you go viral.
Okay, you need to go talk to my director. Because I, as a teacher...
No, I'm letting you know I got an issue with you about that. I'm not playing with you.
I'm sorry that you feel that way.
Yeah, I'm sorry that you feel that way. But you should have called me before you made the decision to put my grandson in a dress.
Okay, you can speak to me.
No, I'm speaking to you.
Please do not talk to me in that tone with my children around.
I wouldn't be up here if you wouldn't have put my grandson in no dress.
Again.
Well, do what you got to do.
No,
I'm taking it up with you.
Please lower your voice. You're in a classroom.
I'm taking it up with you. Well, you shouldn't have put my grandson in no dress.
These two.
This ain't over with, all right?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. What do you think? A little gender role playing at the discretion of the kindergarten teacher? Is that copacetic with you if your kid was in the class?
Well, it's so strange. It looks like, I know they haven't named the teacher or the grandpa, but you see a cross in the background. It looks like it's a, you know, like a Catholic preschool or maybe Episcopalian or Lutheran preschool.
Well, big difference.
I'm just saying I would be upset too, because that's forcing your views and opinions on a two-year-old boy. And she made him wear the dress all day. I mean, for the whole time when he arrived, then soon after he arrived until he left, she had him wear a dress.
You know why I like that gentleman filmed his interaction with that teacher, too?
Sorry, you're going to have to lower your voice, sir.
I mean,
Dan, excuse me.
That whole, like, talking to me, to an adult, talking to a parent, a grandparent in this case, as a child, using that cheap, phony de-escalation lingo when you're talking to an adult, rather than addressing the substance of the complaint being lodged, you can take it up with my supervisor. You have to lower your voice. I'm sorry that you feel that way. No, I'm explaining to you what I have a problem with, and I would like a response from you on point, providing an explanation for why you did this, why you didn't seek my permission, why you didn't inform grandparents or grandparents like myself, and what you plan to do going forward. were two adults having a conversation on the merits of about my grandchild's education and, frankly, safety inside of this school in which I entrust him to you for half the day or the whole day, whatever the case may be. So I want a response from you because you are the one who made the decision. I want to hear from you. You're his teacher. You talk to me like an adult.
So we're learning a little bit more. The two-year-old kid's name is Zach. It was a Christian private school, Dan. And one of Zach's mom's friends said that she saw Zach go to the play area and put on a dress. So and then she came back to the classroom and he still had the dress on.
Christianity comes a lot of different forms these days. So that's hardly dispositive of the issue. And by the way, you don't think you think this is just in school? What happens when you get divorced and custodial rights are at issue? And you got, boy,
that's a hot mess, I can tell you.
Well,
I mean, from doctor's appointment to religion, everything.
How about whether the boy is going to be treated like a boy or a girl? How about that as an argument between the parents?
I'm glad I don't have to go through that.
Yeah.
That would be HE double hockey stick
and,
as well.
And I'm not just saying treated in terms of dress up. I'm talking about treated in terms of, like, puberty blocking drugs.
Oh, I know somebody who's doing that right now.
Let me introduce you to Jeff Younger and Ann Georgilis, who divorced when James and his twin brother, their sons, obviously, were 2 years old. George Alice, the woman, wants full custody of the boys. She asserts that Younger has been emotionally abusive to James, one of their sons. As an example, cited a haircut, other non-affirming actions to treat James like a girl. You see, when James was 2 years old, he told his mom he thought girls were pretty and he liked fingernail polish. James said his mommy told him that made him a girl. Ever since, mom dresses James as a girl.
That doesn't make him a girl. My boys went through a fingernail polish thing. A lot of boys do. Does not mean that they're girls
totally,
at all.
Totally.
Black nail polish, whatever. Like with whatever.
Interestingly, this report of thesteam.com, his behavior is inconsistent, to your point, Amy. When he's at dad's house, James wants to be a boy and wants his dad to call him James. He's 2 years old. He was 2 years old. Now he's six. A family friend said when he's around, when she's around James, he acts like any other six-year-old boy. He loves superheroes, art, playing tag with my sons, smashing rocks and swinging. He enjoys wearing boys' clothing and is happy and energetic kid. He refers to himself as a boy.
And then when he gets to mom's house, let me guess, mommy mommies him too much? And
No, it's not mommying him. It's not like, oh, cut the apron strings. That's not the conversation. Mommy wants James to be a girl. She's facilitating, one would say, imposing gender reassignment, as if you can do that, XX and XY, I refer you to the science. She's imposing it on her two, starting with two and now to six-year-old James, and this is a fight in court between the two parents. Okay? How about that? How about a court adjudicating that? Remember, let people do what they want and whatever, and we don't think about any of the implications. Redefine marriage out of existence. Redefine gender out of existence. Pay no attention to the science. Pay no attention to the importance of particular institutions. And there are no consequences except localized individual consequences to localize individual choices. Do you see now the folly of that position adopted by so many? I bet a certain grandparent with a two-year-old grandson who's being put into a dress in kindergarten sees that now. I bet Mr. Younger in this custody case, and I think it's North Carolina, or maybe it's Florida, wherever, sees that now.
Yeah, I read about that case and thought, oh my gosh. So they're leaving it up to a judge to decide?
Well,
and that depends on how that judge leans. If it's a conservative judge, it's going to be a lot different than if it's a liberal judge.
Well, I mean, how do you do this in a divorce case?
It's a hot mess. I mean, it's awful.
Shelley in Downers Grove.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, I teach kindergarten, which is in the umbrella of early childhood. So I've seen kids playing for 33 years. Sometimes boys put on a dress. Sometimes they play Barbies with the girls. Sometimes they play with the girls and fly superheroes into the house. I've seen actual gender dysphoria in kindergarten. This is completely ridiculous that a child would be forced to wear a dress for the rest of the day, or even allowed to if he chose it, because playtime's over.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that you may not want to have that discussion in front of your class, but I completely believe that the grandfather had every right to come in and say this.
Thank you for the call, Shelley. Appreciate that.
Good point. Playtime's over. Take it off. If you had a mask on, playtime's over. Take that off.
And that, you know, it was something, a chastisement that followed me well into Northwestern. Patrick on the Northwest side.
Yeah, hey, Dan. I'm going to be a little frank here. I think this is more than just an isolated incident. I think there's a proselytization of secular humanism going on in our country that's planned.
No question.
The Pritzker family donates significant amounts of money to organizations for uterine transplants so that men can have babies. I know the way to say it. It sounds satanic to me.
That's barbaric.
Thanks for the call, Patrick.
Men should not be having babies.
There's no question that secular humanism is the effort by the left to impose secular humanism as the national religion. There's just not in doubt. The evidence is overwhelming. And the idea of making people disposable, like mom, you know, having a womb outside the womb. That's what he's talking about.
Don't touch my womb.
Oh. All right. Bruce in Bloomingdale.
Morning, Dan. Morning, Amy. Happy Friday. You know, does anybody really think that peaceful coexistence with these people is possible? They'll shove your kid in a dress and dare you to do something about it. If you make too much noise, they'll probably have you arrested or something. And as far as this court case goes, you know, where mommy wants him to be a little boy, 20 years ago they'd have taken that kid away for child abuse.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for the call, Bruce. That's right. Yeah, 20 years ago, dad's entire argument for full custody would be based on mom's behavior.
Right.
That's a good point. Mike on the north side.
Good morning. First off, a public service announcement for some of your more white bread listeners. Yeah. If an African-American says, I'm not playing with you, you're about 10 seconds from getting your ass whooped. Doesn't matter if it's a crossing guard. You're about to get killed.
Thanks for that translation.
Second of all,
okay.
We had this problem at my daughter's Catholic grade school. We had a music teacher educated at the University of Notre Dame, of course, that wanted to change the lyrics to We Wish You a Happy Holidays instead of We Wish You a Merry Christmas. She wanted to take Christ out of Christmas at a Catholic school. We got rid of her that year.
A few
years later, they wanted to have an ecumenical thing with non-Catholic pseudo-Christian churches, kind of like All Saints Episcopal that lets boys put nail polish on. That doesn't happen at regular Christian churches, Amy. Oh. And we shot that down.
Thanks.
You have to stand your ground against these people
that
want to steal your face.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Appreciate it.
But I'm just saying, if a little boy wants to put on nail polish or have an easy bake oven, it's all right.
Well, I know. That's what that teacher, Shelley from Downers Grove, that's her point, too. Of course. I mean, who didn't go through that?
It doesn't mean that they're transitioning.
Who didn't go through that phase in their mid-30s to early 40s?
You went through it a little later in life. But you went through it, and you're fine.
I was a serious student in kindergarten, so that playtime thing hit me a little bit later in life.
Yeah.
Sean in Elmwood Park.
Yeah, look at Alice Cooper. It worked out pretty well. there's something that goes on, and you see it as a parent. And I'm listening to all your stories. You know, I got up early with you this morning, the whole thing. Every single issue is about force of a society that has been corrupted and coddled. Because this is the genius of the social engineer. Make somebody a victim, then coddle them, and you have a slave forever. So I want you to think about this argument between the grandfather and the teacher from the kid's perspective. He's forced to take a winner and loser, but he spends most time with the non-parent. And that is the entire problem with a public school. Get rid of it. We don't need it anymore. It's the internet age. Everything, every kid has a tablet. Keep your damn kids home, and society will be better in 30 years. The worst thing you're doing is commingling. And as for the church, Prof, I was never big into the whole thing. Yeah, I understand that. But what I've seen with my kids, and I have only sent them to Catholic schools, they are rabid socialists, rabid. Not only that, they are effeminate, each and every one of them.
Maybe they're rebelling against dad. Did you ever think about that?
Haven for debauchery as they're playing Naked Twister in the rectory, which I now figure out why they call it the rectory.
Okay, thanks, John.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
I'm
Dan and Amy. Quickly take Rob in Plainfield. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. Lovely show.
Thank you.
My question is, we don't let 12-year-olds tell us that they can consent to sex. So why do we let a 2- or a 4-year-old tell us that they feel like a boy today or they feel like a girl today?
Well, yeah, thanks for the call, Rob. It's a good point, although it's the issue is adults
manipulating their children.
Well, and
in some cases.
But also using a child's utterance to let the child effectively make the decisions and just be a rubber stamp for whatever little Johnny or little Sally says at any given moment. That's what you have here. And who knows with this woman in that custody case we were talking about, you know, maybe she's also just an ideological advocate for this.
Who knows? All right. Real quickly, we just want to tell you about Food for the Poor. Make a donation of $80 that will provide food for a year and water for life. To donate, 844-862-HOPE or 560theanswer.com, keyword food. And to become a business benefactor, $2,500 tax-deductible donation. The money goes to Food for the Poor, and we will give you 40 60-second commercials. As a way of saying thanks, call Ann Jeanette, 847-472-8951.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Could President Trump be primaried in 2020? 312-642-5600 turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA turnkey.pro text line. Would you entertain a primary challenge to President Trump in 2020? Particularly if, for example, the economy were to slow or even
tank.
Or even
go into recession.
Go into recession, perhaps not next year, but 2020. Take your calls on it. Craig Shirley provokes this conversation. Craig Shirley, a longtime PR guy and author in D.C., well-respected. He writes this piece in the Washington Examiner. Trump will face a primary challenger in 2020, if not several. John Kasich.
Yeah.
Jeff Flake. There could be other contenders or as well who haven't yet expressed interest, such as Senators Joni Ernst of Iowa or Ben Sasse of Nebraska. Now, this is not to say that Trump wouldn't survive the primary, and Craig Shirley doesn't make that case. But he does suggest that Trump has some exposure. And as we've seen before, primary challenges can weaken an incumbent and usher in the other party's nominee. And it can also elevate the primary challenger for a run 4 years later.
Oh, think, a way to get their name out there. And I mean,
yeah, Think about Reagan running both in 68, but particularly in 76 against Gerald Ford. And oh, then he's right. The nominee in 80.
Yep.
He suggests the argument.
Mitt Romney, I mean, that happened to, you know, he ran a few times and then he finally got the nomination.
Well, right.
Ran against Obama.
But it's a different thing to challenge an incumbent, particularly an incumbent president. That's a much different thing than an open field. He writes, Craig Shirley, the argument against Trump, a primary challenger, would go something like this. They'd have to sort of take the idea that Trump is a conservative away from him or away from the mindset of the GOP primary electorate. Not an easy task to do based on Supreme Court nominees alone, I'll add. And Shirley concedes the point. It's a thoughtful piece. This isn't like a Trump hit job. This is actually a sort of a thoughtful, interesting political analysis. Here's what Shirley suggests. The case would have to go something like this against Trump. Trump supports federal subsidies for ethanol, corporate seizure of private property, as expressed in the Supreme Court's Kelo decision. Trump favors the increased regulation of cigarettes. He's exploded our national debt. His administration has made the D.C. swamp deeper. Beyond the 2016 election, Trump has never been a consistent conservative. In the past, he's given generously to Planned Parenthood, Harry Reid, Hillary Clinton. It's not enough to knock Trump, Shirley adds, though. Challenger would also need to make the case for American conservatism that advances freedom, liberty, and the dignity of the private sector. Private individual, I should say. I would add to Shirley's argument that would also necessarily need to include some conversation about Trump's posture on international trade, because that is fundamentally at odds with free market conservatism. And if the economy does slow or worse, his trade policy will be a significant contributor to that.
And the stock market yesterday, my goodness, what a roller coaster ride. I mean, it up what? It's closing just being down 79 points, but still it was a scary thing. And that's because we ordered the arrest of that woman in China. I mean, she's in Vancouver, Canada, but we took her into custody for stealing intellectual property.
Yeah, the CFO of a Chinese telecom company that's engaged in corporate fraud. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you can't live and die on a daily basis with the stock market. We'll talk to Scott Shalady later in the show about the November jobs numbers, and we'll talk to Mark Perry from the University of Michigan, who writes the Carpe Diem blog at the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour about tariffs. But in terms of a Trump primary, particularly say...
Well, don't you think there... Oh, sorry. There might be a chance that he doesn't run for a second term?
Well, there's always a chance. I don't know. I don't know what his posture is. That doesn't seem to be his disposition.
Well, Joe Scarborough said 2 days ago on Morning Joe that he's not going to run again.
Well, Joe Scarborough's an idiot.
Sources have told him.
So,
his source may be being Mika. He's one and done.
I don't see Trump getting pushed out. I don't see him going away, you know, to the cheering hordes of the D.C. press corps. I don't see that. But we'll see. I don't know. But what if the Mueller report damages him further? What if it reveals something that causes some segment of Republicans to question, even if they don't question him in terms of doing anything wrong, question his viability as the nominee in 2020? You know, there's always a lot of dynamics at play. And as we mourn the passing of Bush 41, you know, you can be at the heights and you can find your bottom very quickly as the guy who went from 93% approval rating to losing to Bill Clinton found in 1992.
Yeah, it still is amazing to me.
It's always a dynamic environment. Well, let's take a couple calls. Tom in Deer Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Oh, hi, good morning. No surprise, I would like to see Trump primaried. However, I don't think it's going to happen. This country and the Republican Party, I should say, has been Trumpified, and the oligarchs that control the media most certainly are in favor of Trumpification. So, you know, I'm in a distinct minority.
Tom, who would you want to see primary Trump? I mean, who do you think, who would advance your interest in seeing a Trump primary?
Well, I can't. My interest would be a Ben Sasse, a Mike Lee, a Rand Paul, along those lines.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call, Tom. Libertarian-oriented conservative. where Mike is, where Tom from Deer Park is coming. Right.
All right.
That's sort of what Craig Shirley is saying. I mean, I don't think John Kasich gets or Jeff Flake gets much traction, but a Sass or
a Joni, or I don't even think
no.
Lee, we're not ready for Joni or
Lee or Lee Rand Paul. They're not going to do it. A Sass would be interesting. Anne Marie in Fox Lake.
Hello, good morning. Just a brief comment. I would like to see Condoleezza Rice primary Trump if he can't get something done about immigration. I am angry about what's happening right now.
Okay.
Well, he's doing something about it, though. Or are you angry that there's no
not enough
for the wall?
Not enough. They've got separate, what, 2 more weeks or whatever?
Yeah.
Write a simple law, talk about it, and get something going.
And the something going you want is the promise on the border wall being kept.
Absolutely. And vetting people, you know, vetting people coming into this country, you know, more, I don't know how deeply they can go when they're sitting there at the border and they've got thousands of people to process. But, you know, people coming here to get handouts is just, I work really hard for what I have. And if you want to be a citizen of this country, I expect you to do the same.
Thanks for the call, Anne-Marie. And, I mean, Anne-Marie's comments come on the heels of this report out this week that 64% of non-citizens in the United States receive some sort of welfare benefit.
That's
so
64%.
And here's the thing about this. The border wall, enhancing our security at the border.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, you can say that Trump wanted to do it. He was ready to sign it. He's, you know, making noise about shutting down the government over funding for the wall. But he's the president. You had your party in control of Congress for your first 2 years. You didn't get it done.
No.
And ultimately, he gets held accountable. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to be held accountable by the majority of Republican primary voters, because I don't think he will be. And I don't think President Trump right now is in any jeopardy of a serious challenge that would jeopardize his renomination. However, you know, small things can add up to big things. Chip in St. Charles.
You know, the second biggest enemy Trump has is the Republican Party.
Yeah.
45 members of Congress retired. We would hold the House of Representatives right now if it wasn't for, you know, these guys jumping ship instead of giving some alliance to President Trump. And it wouldn't surprise me at all. These guys are, they've been rhinos their whole life. This is what we're fighting. And if Flake and Sass and Corker and whoever wants to run against them, you know, let them. Let them play their hand.
Yeah.
So it's not going to surprise me if somebody primaries Trump. That's just who they are.
Thanks for the call, Chip. I mean, it's sort of for Trump to generate a primary. It could, depending on where he's at, you know, thinking about that far ahead is sort of an imponderable. But let's say things are generally speaking sort of where they are now. A primary not only would energize Trump voters, it also reinforces his brand as exactly what Chip said. The guy who was taking on the establishment of both parties, which was his appeal in 2016, such that, you know, he got a lot of Dems that voted for Bernie Sanders in the general election.
Yeah, but I personally don't like the political infighting. If we're all supposed to be on the same team, I don't like when that goes on. I just, it's too much. We don't need it. I mean, if he's doing well, he shouldn't be primaried.
Well, that's the if.
Right.
Kevin in Northfield.
Dan, I love you. You know I do. But I got to disagree with you. America does not need 6 feet of sass. We don't need 6 feet of sass. But I tell you who we do need.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You ran for governor, Dan. In a different world, you'd be running things right now. We need Sean from Elmwood Park to run as the candidate to primary Trump. Sean from Elmwood Park. That's what I said.
Okay, thanks for the call.
John Bonamanam? Who did he say?
Sean from Elmwood Park.
Oh.
You're familiar with him?
I'm familiar with his work.
By the way, I'm not advocating, I mean, on the serious side of what he said, I'm not advocating for Ben Sass to primary him, nor do I think Ben Sass would defeat Trump. I'm just going through this this sort of think piece that Craig Shirley did. It's interesting discussion, I find, that's all. Frank in Tinley Park.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, I'd like to weigh in. I was a Trump voter, but I would like to see him primaried now that I've gotten the two Supreme Court justices that I wanted. The gentleman I'd like to see run is Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana.
The doctor.
A real doctor?
I don't know if Senator Kennedy is a doctor or not, but he's that rare conservative who also happens to be a media darling. And his personality and demeanor are just infectious.
Well, thanks for the call, Frank. You know what happens to media darlings, though, that are Republicans. They're media darlings so long as they're attacking a Republican the media wants attacked. And then when they face up against a Democrat, they're no longer media darlings. Please see John McCain in 2008. So, you know, be careful how much stock you put in a potential candidate based on his relationship or her relationship with the media if they're Republican. Joe in Franklin Park.
Yeah, I think the roadmap is pretty simple. It's going to happen. Mueller's report is going to be damning. Then you're going to see a guy like Jeff Flake that's going to try to primary him and use that against him and split the Republican Party, guaranteeing a Democrat win.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call, Joe. I mean, it's possible. John Kennedy's an attorney. I'm thinking of a name now I forgot.
Wow. If there was a number associated with it, you wouldn't forget. Do you want me to Google anything?
I'm sort of onto the last stage of my existence.
You need some balance of
nature. I think my journey is coming to a near end.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Thank you to our many business benefactors like Cafe Salsa, AmericanEagle.com, Matthew Hickey at Law, Twin Supplies in Oakbrook, Signature Bank, so many more. Thank you. Cafe Salsa gets two mentions. The way to be a business benefactor and help us with our Food for the Poor 2018 campaign with the goal of feeding for a year and providing water for life for 3,000 Haitian children is to call our sales manager, Anjanette, 847-492-80. I just forgot it.
Maybe you need some balance of nature. It will help.
I think that Grand Slam reference is not sitting well.
It's called food coma. Yeah. Well, you had fruit, maybe because you ate something actually healthy for the first time in your life.
I think my system is rejecting the bananas.
You were so upset. With the bananas.
Yeah.
And here we are talking about food. It's so easily to come by here.
Yes.
But in Haiti, even clean water, you can't go to a park. You can't walk into a restaurant and ask for a glass of water. That's not possible.
847-492-8951.
No.
Is that right?
847-472-8951.
472-8951.
847-472-8951.
847-472-8951 is what you're saying.
What I'm saying is yes. And ask for the Business Benefactor Program. Again, a $2,500 tax-deductible donation, and we give you 40 60-second commercials. And poverty, I mean, I know we've talked about it, but here's Todd Chapman from Food from the Poor.
The challenge when you look at poverty is pervasive in a country like Haiti. I mean, if you go there, it just seems like, wow, this is too big, it's not fixable. But if you kind of, if you go from macro to micro and you focus in on communities and you look at the impact within communities, slowly but surely, Food for the Poor, thanks to our donors, is making a lasting impact in Haiti. And really, the new point of focus, thanks to our executive director down in Haiti right now, really focusing on the kids. We've amped up our feeding programs in schools. Just made a huge focus on that. We targeted expanding our feeding programs in schools to 200 more schools. Ended up being 500 more schools just this year. And what are the benefits of that? Well, number one, the children are the future. Right.
Ending the cycle.
Yeah. And so we're trying to end that cycle of poverty. You got to start it with the kids. And so now more than 500 schools, in addition to what we were already doing, now have a Food for the Poor sponsored feeding program. That's resulted in the kids that were going to school being better students. Their health has improved. And now we're seeing kids that didn't used to come to school. Their parents are making sure they get to school.
That's great. So we're asking for a one-time donation of $80. Would that feed a child for a year, provide clean water for life? Go to 560theanswer.com Chicago.com/food.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2, right before Joe Walsh at 5, on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The exodus from Illinois continues. Happy 200-year bicentennial birthday, Illinois.
Yeah, did you get my card?
Said Alliance Steel, announcing it's moving over to Gary, Indiana from Bedford Park this week.
Oh, no.
Plans to invest $20 million in Gary. The company is beginning renovations in Gary in early 2019. Could be operational there by 2020. Currently has 100 workers, and employment in Gary could reach 130 by 2023, says the CEO. Andy Gross, Alliance Steel CEO, Indiana, Northwest Indiana, making all the right moves to recreate a very promising industrial area. Revitalizing Northwest Indiana. Gary.
Well, good for Gary. They need something.
Under Republican supermajority control of the state of Indiana. Out Rockford way, Seal Right Door. Been in Rockford the last 15 years. Nope. 80 jobs in a $60 million facility going to
16.
Beloit. 16.
Yeah.
Going to Beloit, announced Seal Right Door.
How much are they going to save on property taxes?
I don't know the numbers of that yet, but
I'm sure a lot.
The mayor of Rockford, Tom McNamara, Democrat. We're fighting against a whole host of factors, from lower wage costs in Wisconsin to lower tax rates in Wisconsin. Oh, you don't say, Tom. And where are you on those issues? And your friends and your party. Okay. These are the ones that don't make much in the way of headlines except locally. But it's that chip, chip, chip of mid-size companies, of entrepreneurs, of people who are part of the productive citizenry saying, my future is not in Illinois. And what does that say about Illinois' future? Well, what about the schools? Geneva School District strike. Talked about it this week. We talked about the inputs. And we talked about it from the taxpayer perspective. Taxpayer not at the table in these discussions, generally speaking. I think the administration and the school board in 304 has been a little bit better so far than most in terms of providing information so that citizens can make informed decisions about who's being reasonable and who isn't. But what about outputs, right? This is a drum I beat a lot because it needs to be. This state is so uninterested in the outputs they get for their inputs, it is remarkable. In these discussions about teacher salaries, about bond issues, about pensions and health care, about school facilities, the empire building that goes on in K-12 education, about debt accumulation, everything is for the kids, and nobody wants to talk about what kind of kids are we producing as students. In other words, what's the quality of education that kids are earning? Is that interesting to you? Isn't that the point of K-12 education?
You want to know where your tax dollars are going to. I mean, if they're being put to good use.
So, Kane County Reporter, we looked at the outputs. Kane County wide, including District 304. May be of interest to you. I mean, this is one measure, ACT scores. It's not the whole thing, but it's something. It is a measure. You know, most colleges are still using ACT scores and SAT scores as a part of your application for entrance, right? So it's relevant. It's some indication, and it's something you can measure over time. So it has longitudinal value. Kane County taxpayers spending twice as much on high schools as they did 20 years ago. ACT scores across the county have actually fallen over the 20 years. Twice as much money for declining results. Is that how the private sector works? You spend more money to reduce the quality of your product? Even keeping it the same is unacceptable. The whole point of doing something well is that you start to do it well at lower cost. Right? Or is that not right? From 97 to 2017, public high school districts in Kane County, Republican county, generally speaking, too, by the way. So this is a postpartisan discussion. Culture problem. High school districts in the county have increased annual tax spending from $819 million to $1.65 billion real dollars adjusted for inflation, 101% increase, while enrollment in Kane County high schools has increased 39%. So 3X enrollment, that's the spending increase. ACT scores fell from 21.8 average 1997 to 20.4 in 2017, which is now lower than the state average of 21.4. Yeah? You still on board for the blank check for your local school district? Do you care about outputs? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro, text line. For the money that's been spent in Geneva since the teachers on strike, we'll start there. As we mentioned earlier this week, 142% increase in spending and tax dollars going to Geneva 304 over the past 20 years against a 48% enrollment increase. So, again, about 3X spending to enrollment. ACT scores in Geneva, 304, have actually gone up a little bit from 23.3 to 24.1. You think the 3X spend over enrollment is what explains that? You think the $125,000 median compensation package for a 304 teacher explains that? Let me tell you what largely explains that. You know what happened in Geneva over the last 20 years?
What?
Got more affluent.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So there's a pretty high correlation between household income and education. So that's what's going on. How about Kane County wide? Oh, boy. I'm not even getting to the debt load yet. Aurora East, 56% increase in enrollment, 134% increase in tax dollars. Aurora West, 42% increase in enrollment, 108% increase in tax dollars. U46 in Elgin, 25% enrollment increase, 64% increase in tax dollars. By the way, U46 also has $400 million in debt, which by itself is almost one-third of the total debt load of schools in Kane County, school districts. Batavia Senior, 27% increase in enrollment, 100% increase in tax change. Geneva talked about Caneland Senior, 96% increase in enrollment, 204% increase in taxes, tax dollars to the school. 28% increase in enrollment in St. Charles, 95% increase in tax dollars. So, it's important because what are you always told? Well, we've had an explosion in Kane County. All these people have moved in. There's more kids going to school. Right, exactly. True. But you don't look at that number in a vacuum. You look at the number in the context of what has the response been. Has a 3 and 4 to 1 spend increase to enrollment increase, has that been a fair response to accommodate it? Again, if you're scaling something successfully, you're reducing the cost of providing it as you scale. Is that what's happening? Caneland, 96% increase in enrollment, 204% increase in tax dollars. You think that's enough? It also has $120 million in debt, which is twice, $120 million, nearly twice what it receives in taxes and 126% of its state mandated limit. Something else that doesn't matter. You just blow the legal limits when it comes to borrowing debt accumulation. So it's gotten almost four times tax $1 million increase over enrollment increase, and it's still piled up $120 million in debt, twice what it receives in taxes, and 126% of its state-mandated limit. And what's the net-net in Kane County? Static or declining academic results. And it's not just Kane County, and it's not just Geneva 304. Just using this as an example, since Geneva 304 teachers gave us this opportunity to have this important discussion. Ken in Geneva, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, I have just a couple points that I'd ask if you could add to. But in the Geneva School District, a big sticking point is the step and lane compensation, where if a teacher gets an additional master's degree, then they want to immediately be able to get additional pay. We don't see that in the private sector. I took my education and I own my own business, and I spend more of my time figuring out taxes that I have to pay for everybody else's pensions and retirement than I do for my own family. I just don't find that to be a fair deal. And then the other question I have for you is the NEA, the IEA, and the GEA all seem to be in cahoots, and we seem to see this thing happen from Lake County to Cook County to Kane County, all coordinated. And at what point does that become extortion to the taxpayers? We have no alternatives, and the education system is inefficient and not looking at things like adjuncts or online education and things that could provide more technology applications and learning applications that are being used in colleges and universities. So I'll be quiet and listen to what you have to say, but thanks for letting me speak my words.
Thanks for the call, Ken. I mean, look, those are all good points and good topics you raise, particularly on the matter of defined benefit pension plans. You know, here's something, just in terms, because I think generally speaking, what you're talking to is the taxpayer's not at the table. This doesn't have representation at the bargaining table. It should, in the form of the school board. One way to do this, and you don't need to wait for any reforms to come from the political ruling class in Springfield, is if you had school board members that said, you know, here's what we're going to do. We're going to wait for something to be imposed on us. We're going to look at the data. We're going to see what we're getting for the money that's being spent. And I'm going to put the taxpayers at the table by saying, right now, median property tax rate as a percentage of home value in Geneva 304 is 2.57%, which is 2.5 times the national average. That's why property values are declining in Geneva like everywhere else, despite the increasing affluence, the increasing household income. So here's how I'm going to put taxpayers at the table. I'm going to see how we can slash that median property tax rate as a percentage of home value in half, even if it's over time, over a couple of budget years. We're going to set goals that are taxpayer-oriented, because I believe for the spend that we're outlaying, we can produce the same or better results for the students and families. And, oh, by the way, that is the point. School districts are not jobs programs. There's a point to those enterprises, just as there's a point to private enterprise. Private enterprise to turn a profit. K through 12 education at the public sector is to educate children. And I'm sure there are great teachers at Geneva. And, you know, the 24.1 ACT, okay. You know, you're going to have a lot of college-bound kids coming out of Geneva. Great. Is this the most efficient performance you can provide?
And, you know, they had canceled the girls' basketball game and the boys' game tonight.
And also,
it's about the kids.
Yeah, right. And by the way, you're doing this while you're liquidating 95% of Geneva 304 funding comes from local property tax dollars. You're liquidating home values. You're liquidating home equity by doing so. And this is not to absolve the state of its responsibility, constitutional responsibility, primary funder of K through 12 education. It's why I want to put caps on property tax at the local level to force the state's hand to focus on properly funding K through 12 education. But, I mean, we have to have some accountability at the local level, too, and I'm not seeing it. I mean, I'm seeing it, like I said, with the school district and the administration more so than in most places, both in terms of transparency as well as now transparency, because they're getting all this attention, as well as position in terms of, you know, where they're drawing lines. But more information needs to be provided so you have the robust discussion this demands. Rick in Geneva.
Hey, Dan, put three people, hey, Amy, put three kids through the Geneva school system, and I am paying for performance, and I'm glad at the end there you did mention that Geneva's performance is improving. And I think it's kind of sad to blame the slaves, and you got to go after the head of the snake. So when you talk about the board transparency and how they've treated the superintendent, who I believe they're responsible for his career path, look at the pay increases he's received for the school performance.
Yeah.
So
are you supporting those pay increases or not supporting them?
No, I'm supporting paper for performance and control of my taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And considering running for school board now because I don't know what else to do. I'm happy to live there, happy to pay the taxes. The kids have turned out good. Schools are improving. But it's not sustainable.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Rick. Yeah, and I mean, and again, I just asked the question, do you think the 3X increase in tax dollars that are provided the school district over increase in enrollment, you think that's what's responsible for a 0.8% or 0.8 point increase in the average ACT score in Geneva 304? You think that's what did it? And frankly, is that enough of a return on that money spend, even if you think that is what did it? Come on. Chet and Lyle.
Hi, good morning, Dan and Amy. The poster child of all you're talking about is Lyle Community School District, Unit School District 202. Look at page one on the Daily Herald. There is a group called the Go ReFundMe Team that has filed a petition to reduce the property taxes using the new state law that came into effect in August of 2017. And there is a citizen who we don't know who he's funded by, is out there, filed an objection, and there's going to be a hearing by Bonnie Wheaton later this month. People are taking action, and the best source of information for people, easy access, is the Illinois report card, because it bears a lot of this information out. And Lyle 202 has declining enrollment, continually increasing taxes, and declining overall declining performance. The poster child of everything you're talking about. Take a look. Thank you.
We'll take a look at Lyle 202, Chad. We're going to take a look at all these school districts. I mean, but by the way, starting, you know, the most vaunted Hinsdale District 86, which just lost that $166 million bond issue referendum.
Yeah.
They're going at it again. They enlist some hawks locally, probably through their wives, Eric Daze and Adrian. Oh, are going to host a fundraiser kickoff for District 86 because they didn't get the message from taxpayers. You know what the average teacher's compensation package is in Hinsdale School District 86?
What? I'm dying to know.
$154,000. And then you want to talk about pensions where they're putting in $30,000 for every million they get back. Statewide, not just Hinsdale, not just Geneva. $30,000 in for $1 million guaranteed back. And you know, wait till you hear more about the performances of all these wealthy areas who've been wealthy for a long time. Geneva has become wealthier. And you think that, well, these schools must be so robust intellectually. They're turning out academic killers. And that's where you'd largely be wrong, at least in terms of looking at what's happened over an extended period of time and trying to attribute cause and effect, which should be something, actually, they're teaching people to do, you know, in K-12 education. And maybe parents should be doing what they hope their kids are being taught in K-12 schools. Connecting inputs to outputs. Dot connecting. The bane of Illinois' ruling class.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer. On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. November jobs number, 155,000 new jobs in November. Under,
is that expected or under?
Yeah, it's under the street estimates, which were, I think, around 180,000. Is this an indication of a slowing economy? Are we headed to slow growth, not the robust growth we've enjoyed the last few quarters? Are we... will that be exacerbated by an ongoing trade war, both in terms of rhetoric as well as tariffs with China? For answers to these and many other questions, we're pleased to be joined again by Scott the Cow Guy Shalady, Fox Business contributor. Scott, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning. Good morning.
So we in for another wild ride on Wall Street today?
Well, you know, it's going to sound crazy, but, I mean, this number probably will actually calm nerves on Wall Street. If we would have seen a real strong jobs number, that would have been, you know, people's imaginations would have got ahead of themselves about more rate hikes, and that would have sent the stock market a lot lower. But even now in the pre-market open, we've seen it strengthen up here to open maybe up a little bit higher on the day, just because that miss on the expectations, and expectations are a load of baloney anyway. But when the expectation was more like almost 200,000, 198,000, part 55, they're going to say, hey, maybe we take that, put off the gas pedal when it comes to interest rate hikes. So that's gotten Wall Street kind of settled down a little bit this morning.
Well, but yesterday, though, so the Dow closed down 79 points, but it was whiplash. It was up and down. What slowed it down? Was it that the Federal Reserve said that they're not going to touch interest rates?
Well, it's the Zohar, right?
Hey, Scott, we're having a little bit of trouble hearing you.
Can you talk into your phone?
All right, can you? All right, how's that better?
That's a thousand times better.
Yeah.
The excuse of the day is going to be a Wall Street Journal report yesterday that said the Fed was aware of what's been happening out there, and they might have to take a wait and see when it comes to interest rate hikes, especially now in this month. So that really turned things around, and that was why you saw the 700-point comeback. You know, that's what they're going to blame it on. But at the end of the day, there was also some capitulation. It was kind of a sell everything. It didn't matter what was out there. And we've seen the algorithms in these high frequency trading machines get involved as well. So yesterday was a great example about how it's hard to be involved on a day-to-day basis. And if you want to invest, it's got to be on a yearly basis, because yesterday is just kind of garbage and we try to throw it out because it's white noise.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to live and die with the Dow each day, but you do look for direction, and so you have some countervailing signals this week. One is Trump's pronouncement that I am a tariff man, cuckoo, ca-choo. And then yesterday you had Fiat Chrysler announce they're opening a new assembly factory in Detroit, even as GM has been critical of Trump's tariffs in terms of the impact on their business, and that announcement we discussed previously about layoffs. So, you know, sort of your assessment of what came out of the G20, what came out of Trump's Twitter account, and what came out of the automotive industry yesterday.
I fully expect Trump to stay with his hard line. I don't think he'll back up. But there's been something that came out yesterday that nobody's picked up yet. I'll give it exclusively to you, but there is an underlying feeling about this Huawei, this telephone company that the chief operating officer was arrested in Canada. There is a feeling that is China giving Trump a win, so that there may be some sort of deal when it comes to the tariffs, because in doing so, they get rid of a problem company. It's also a very wealthy landed gentry family in China, which would get rid of them as well, give Xi more power. So there is a story going around saying that this is really something that was given to Trump as a win, and then maybe we can move forward with some sort of end to the tariff problem. Number two is, we're not going to have a recession if we keep seeing corporate earnings okay, right? They can slow down, but they're still earning, right? We always kind of confuse a slowdown with they're not negative, they're not losing money, they're just not making as much. And if that's the case, we won't see a recession next year. I think that everybody's got their underwear in a bunch, because we're not going as fast as we were, but we're still doing well, and we're still doing better than anybody else out there. So if you want to trade places with any other major economy, I'd like to see which one it is, because I don't see one any better.
And so you don't see one in 2020? A recession?
Well, that now you're asking me to be like the Fed. And the Fed, every time they try to think about anything 3 to 6 months out, has always been wrong. I mean, it's pretty difficult. And in 2020, considering what we've just seen even yesterday, to say that we're going to have a recession, I mean, I could also say we're not going to have a recession and give you 10 reasons why that's the case. Mm-hmm. So it would just be you and I arguing over a pint of lager instead of really what's in front of us. And what's in front of us are, right now, things aren't too bad.
With respect to just speaking about other countries, because, of course, what happens in Europe, what happens with China has an impact on our economy and our ability to grow. Sort of meltdown of support and progress on Brexit. And I know you're based in London, so you have some on the ground perspective in addition to intellectual perspective on Brexit. But you have conservatives like Daniel Hannan sort of throwing up his hands with respect to Tories that are abandoning May and the idea of exiting the EU.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of talk about that, and when push comes to shove, she gets the ball over the line somehow. I mean, I'm not happy with the deal that she's come back with, but no one's going to be happy with everything. Nigel Farage, a good guy, I like him, we get along, but he was expecting something that was going to be perfect. So I think that if you take a look at what the costs would have been to stay in the European Union over the next 50 years, they're gargantuan. I mean, if Europe wants to have their own army, they're going to have to pay for it. You're going to have to pay to bail out some of these countries. You're going to have to pay to bail out some of these banks. Think about the costs of staying in this club, which nobody talks about. There's some economic costs, which the Bank of England has tried to put out. But there are some much larger things that people don't really think about that are going to make this 2 to 3 year cut look cheap in the end.
So is getting out, is getting this deal done, is May getting this deal done and maintaining power, is that important for Britain's economy and by extension our economy? Or is Europe sort of going to go the way of France? They're just going that way at different paces.
Yes, I think that's close to the truth. I mean, nobody's talking about Macron in France is just facing now his own internal struggles, and they've put forward maybe a challenge to vote him out of office there. So France is melting down in front of our eyes. You know what's happened with Italy, and they're thumbing their noses at Brussels. And now this with the UK, I think what will happen, the problem is with UK, wherever you would turn is a big pile, right? You don't want to do another referendum. Everybody will be angry. If you have another referendum, it's not going to be by a large margin of whoever wins or loses. So that's not going to give you any clarity either. So every which way you turn in this problem, there isn't going to be a good outcome. So I think that ultimately when it comes to either swallowing something you don't like or handing over power to Corbyn and the Labour Party here, I think the Tories will wake up on Tuesday morning and think, I just can't do it. I'm going to have to vote for this thing.
And so, you know, talked about we don't want to be anybody else. You know, where would you rather be than America? And OK, I can see that point. But how much of China's slowing economic growth and the problems you just described in the EU could negatively impact America, regardless of corporate earnings?
Well, that's a great point. And at some point in time, it will drag on the U.S. I mean, we can't go it alone. There is going to be a problem for the near future in Europe, and they just aren't going to be able to get their act together. Merkel is going to be going. We still have Greece. You've got Italy that just bubbled up, and then don't forget about the Catalans and Spain. It's not good. So that will be a drag. China will be a drag, and they've manufactured their own GDP for I don't know how many years now. And I've said it before that you look at that economy, forget about how the U.S. might be slowing but still growing, but just not as fast. You know, they took millions of people off of their bikes and put them in cars. Mm-hmm. They took them off their rice and started feeding them steak. You try to take the steak away and give them rice again, or try to take the car away and give them the bike again, they have a huge problem. So I think that ultimately that could slowly degrade our own growth here, but not as much as I think people think. And number two is if we do get a deal done with some free trade at the same time, you might think we might be heading into a recession, Amy, in 2020. Mm-hmm. What does the stock market do if we don't raise interest rates like we think and we get a deal done with China? So there are some things that could really still, you know, propel us higher.
Right. And this is sort of the question, right, is the idea of replacing steak with rice, does that deleverage China faster than announcements by GM here of laying off 14,000 people and shuttering plants deleverages Trump?
Well, I mean, that's the naughty question right there, because you want to get in a fight with a guy that's willing to sacrifice 30 million of his people to get his point across.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's right? That's the problem. So we're in a fight with a guy that just doesn't care and doesn't care about, you know, has anything to lose. But maybe the general, you know, the big economies around the world will help cajole him that way. And we know that that's Trump's number one goal, is to change the way we trade with China around the world. And he wants to get this coalition of the old NATO, Europe, and Japan to force China's hand and make things fair again. And I don't think anybody's really going against that, but it's just, how do you get that done? At the same time, your economy may be slowing because China's is going down, and he's got a lot on his plate.
He is Scott the Cow Guy Shalady, Moo, Fox Business contributor. Scott, thanks for joining us.
I thought I'd hear you do
that. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Have a good weekend, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
With his udders. Thanks so much. And he, yeah. He joined us.
Oh, boy.
I'm an Iowa farm girl. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, you making your New Year's resolutions, Jan?
I have one.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. See if you can beat Amy's.
No
for
more
degree of difficulty.
No more Grand Slam breakfasts from Denny's.
Well,
I mean, I'm not slamming Denny's, but as you said, pancakes don't travel well.
Yeah, they really
and
don't.
And I have food coma. I can't eat that much food.
I don't have food coma, and that's my customer box suggestion. When I order a Grand Slam breakfast, and I make my own, and I'm thinking breakfast sausage and bacon.
Yeah.
I'm not thinking two tiny breakfast sausages and two strips of bacon.
Your breakfast sausage were as big as my pinky. You could barely see them.
I'm thinking, you know, I need my protein to sustain myself.
Oh, that's right.
Otherwise, I start mixing up which senators from Louisiana is a doctor and which one's a lawyer.
I feel like I don't even know you, though, because you ordered a side of fruit.
No, I like fruit. Okay. Ooh. Right. Exactly. I wanted more of that.
I'm sorry. What did you say?
Moo. Right. But I wanted that in sausage. Well, that would be a pig.
Yeah.
I wanted that. Well, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I wanted protein is the point.
So what about New Year's resolutions? What's yours?
So it's interesting.
Do you have one?
It's difficult to improve upon perfection, of
course.
Oh,
my God.
Tomorrow.
It's so hard being down prom.
Tomorrow, winter, medium.com compiled a bunch of suggestions that are compounding New Year's resolutions, meaning small changes that if you sustain them will have a compounding effect improving your life. Okay. And put them into categories, interpersonal and mindfulness, finances, health.
Finances is...
Or maybe there's three categories.
Health. Yeah, you should go to the doctor.
Yeah, three categories.
My problem is I go to too many doctors.
Well, here's the thing, like interpersonal mindfulness, wake up early while I do that. All right, so that's good.
Please, you've got that covered.
Spend time in prayer or meditation first thing in the morning. I do that. Practice gratitude. Be specific when thanking someone. Keep a personal...
No offense, but the please and thank yous, you might have missed that lesson.
Please and thank you. I'm very polite.
Okay. No, you're very polite. And one thing you do, if ever we do an event together, you always let me walk on stage first. That's huge. Because a lot of men that I've worked with walk out and they don't care. I mean, you're a gentleman that way.
There's no question about that.
But when people sneeze, you might want to say, God bless you, or Gesundheit. I'm just...
What are you talking about?
Uh-oh, see? Now we're... Now we're going to an uncomfortable place.
But you just sneeze. You're like, when you're
I sneeze all the time.
When you're blowing your nose, I don't have to say, God bless you. I didn't sneeze.
Let's go on. Move on.
Keep a personal calendar. That worked out. Look how well that worked out for Brett Kavanaugh. Saved his Supreme Court-ness. Write something, anything every day. That's a good one.
Oh, you've got that covered.
Finances, negotiate your salary.
I think you've got that covered.
Do that. Practice making money online.
Or gambling. What? Online gambling? Did somebody say that?
Well, it's open to interpretation.
Hello?
contribute early and often to your IRA 401k. Well, unless you're a public sector employee in Illinois, then you don't have to worry about that. Pay off your credit cards monthly. That's a great one. If you're not doing that, you got to do that. It's just a wealth killer.
I have a girlfriend. Every time we pay off a credit card, not that I have a lot, but we'll text each other a congratulatory text. And I think that's cool to celebrate fiscal responsibility.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome.
That's good.
And then we go spend more money.
Sure. now that moment has passed. At least you have like an accountability mechanism with your friend. Health, sleep 8 hours or more each night. I mean, that's just absurd. Who can do that?
Sleep eight hours a week.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
8 hours a night.
I'm sorry, Miss Winter. Not all of us are part of the landed aristocracy.
I try to go to bed at 8, which turns into 9, which turns into 10.
Yeah.
Which sometimes turns into 11. I have like 5 loads of laundry to do every day.
I mean, 8 hours. I would
cook and clean and coach and. Ugh.
Even if you had the time to sleep 8 hours a night.
Oh, I would.
I wouldn't want to do it because there's just so much to do.
No, you need sleep. Is so important.
And plus, it's like, you know, I don't want to be here that much longer.
Wow.
You know, it's
so
like,
what's really going on, Dan?
I mean, it's just.
No, talk to me.
I want to live to 120. I don't.
I don't. Well, who does?
Yeah.
Exactly. So how do you want me to snub you out? Leg of lamb and then I eat it afterwards? So the weapons?
No, I don't want to be murdered. Oh. It's not the same thing.
Okay.
I'm sorry for the confusion.
Excuse me, I get homicidal sometimes.
Ice flow, maybe.
Yeah.
We'll send you off like the Inuits in Alaska.
I have provided all of my funeral arrangements.
With who, Hayek?
Jeff Heisman. Jeff Reisman.
The Heisman Trophy's tonight. Jeff Reisman's our general manager.
That.
I know.
Jeff Reisman, a Heisman Trophy winner.
Oh, that's right.
That's
a running back
confused.
From Purdue.
The first, right after Jay Berwanger. He was the second, I believe.
He went to Bradley. Anyhow, yes.
He has an under lock and key, all of the particulars. You all have a role.
Oh,
so
can I be a...
Looking forward to that.
I want to be an usher.
You can do, yeah.
Or no, I should be
that
a pallbearer.
That way you can dance.
We're certainly not going to have you do a reading.
Name assassinator.
I turn it into a MyPillow live read. I don't know what you're talking about.
Name assassinator.
And I'll deliver you a eulogy and said, if only he had balance of nature.
It's true. Maybe it's not too late. All right.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Remember who this
rock
was?
Steady,
you know who sang it?
Ooh,
One Hit Wonder.
Rock. I don't know. What is Wu Hong Tong?
What? The Whispers. The Whispers.
The Whispers?
The correct
what
answer.
I've been doing all week, whispering?
Yeah. All right. Our friend Zach Model, mm-hmm. friend of the show, Burr Ridge Village trustee, also one of the executives at a multi-generational family manufacturing business out in Lyons, West Central Cook County, Atlas Toolworks. He was on Fox Business talking about the tariff man, self-described, and Trump's approach to China.
When profit doesn't matter to these companies and they have a government behind them helping them cheat and steal, how can we compete? We need to do it smarter. And what it comes down to is jobs. It's not just about high tech and innovation. It's about jobs. It's about national security. And all the employees like mine, you know, when I lost my telecom customers in the early 2000s, we had to lay people off. We reinvented ourselves, but a lot of other companies couldn't. Telecom and so many other sectors are really important. We're talking about good jobs for Americans versus growth and good jobs for people in China. I want to see it made here. And I want to see it secure and safe so we can trust what's going through our networks.
Now, Zach Model is a very smart guy and a successful businessman and Republican. And that opinion is a prevailing one in the era of Trump. There's no question about it. But it's a good economics. I mean, we've had these discussions on this show, and I don't agree with where Zach is going, and I don't agree with Trump's pronouncement of being a tariff man, and I don't agree that you look at economics through the eye of the state's interests. I'm looking at it through the eye of the consumer's interests, which is, I think, where most classical economists are and what free market conservatives used to be. And Steve Moore, for example, we talk to regularly, is somewhere in between. But I want to take the arguments that are being made, because I think they're being made from a good place, as in the case of Zach Model, and address them. And to help us do that and engage you in our listening audience, we're pleased to be joined by Mark Perry. Mark Perry is a University of Michigan economics professor, and he is also the author and archivist and for Carpe Diem blog at the American Enterprise Institute. This is one of the best economic blogs on the internet. It's Carpe Diem, like a marginal revolution. If you're interested in economic policy, thought-provoking articles and commentary, data to try to understand and think about, Carpe Diem is must reading on a daily basis. It certainly is for me. Mark Perry, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, hi, Dan. Yeah, happy to be back.
So I want to have you address what Zach said. You know, here's a manufacturing proprietor here in the Chicagoland area saying, you know, generally speaking, I like what Trump's doing because I want Chicagoland and America to be the international center for manufacturing, for producing, for generating the wealth, creating jobs that are generating the manufacturing, not China.
Right. Well, I mean, that's where you were just mentioning that we should look at trade and all economic issues through the viewpoint of the consumer and not the producer. Producers always have a strong self-interest in reducing competition. In an ideal world for a producer, they'd like to be a monopolist and be the only producer in the industry. And so what they'll do is they'll invest resources and engage in what economists call rent-seeking, trying to limit the amount of competition. And one way to do that is through protectionism, because domestic firms don't really like to have to compete against foreign firms. And so when we think of protectionism, it's a form of crony capitalism, and it's legal plunder, and it's the producers trying to restrict competition, which makes them better off, their industry and their workers, but it puts the rest of the economy at risk, and it's a really bad deal then for the U.S. consumers.
Well, why shouldn't we try to restrict competition when the competition is unfair? Chinese-sponsored companies like Huawei and others in these spaces that are unfairly being provided support or insulation from competition with respect to American companies.
Well, we often think of the U.S. as this great free open economy, but we put a lot of restrictions on foreign trade. For example, for the last 50 years or more, we've had a 25% tariff on pickup trucks or any imported trucks coming into the country, and it's given Ford and GM kind of a monopoly or a duopoly on the pickup truck industry. We also don't allow any foreign sugar into the country, and so our sugar prices are twice the world price because of our prohibition on foreign sugar coming into the U.S. market. And then in terms of the subsidies, we subsidize our farmers. We have a lot of subsidies. We're subsidizing, you know, Amazon to relocate to a new headquarters. So there's a lot of subsidies for U.S. companies. And then to the extent that foreign taxpayers are subsidizing foreign producers, we should welcome that. In fact, I had it on my blog the other day, that we should send them chocolates and flowers and a thank you note and not condemn them, because what they're doing is making their products more affordable for U.S. consumers and U.S. companies. And so it's really like a gift of foreign aid. And so to whatever extent they're willing to subsidize their producers and lower prices for Americans, we should welcome that.
Speaking of condemnation, I found it very strange on Wednesday that, you know, our nation's focus was, of course, on the state funeral for George H.W. Bush. But during that same time, the CEO of General Motors, Mary Barra, she was on Capitol Hill, and lawmakers were trying to figure out a way to punish her for closing the sedan factories. And why is it the government's business how she structures her company?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great example, of just unnecessary intrusion of politics into American commerce and American corporations. If what people maybe don't fully understand is General Motors operates as a global company. They're a multinational corporation. They produce all around the world. They sell all around the world. They invest around the world. They hire around the world. They're thinking of their company, as they should, through a global perspective and a global lens. And so to try to force them to think narrowly through this, you know, make America first, or this nationalist viewpoint, is really damaging, and is not a good way for us to approach our multinational corporations, who are having to compete in an intensely competitive global environment with these global supply chains. And so she has every right, or General Motors has every right, to make the decisions that they have to make to survive. One thing is that General Motors now sells more cars in China than they sell in the United States. So maybe it makes sense for them to produce cars there instead of producing them here and shipping them over there. So again, I think General Motors is making the right decisions. They have to do that to survive in this intensely hyper-competitive global marketplace.
One of the things that's interesting is, for people who otherwise are skeptical of the government's ability to effectively do much of anything, there is an assumption that if the government moves to protect an industry, it's going to do so in a productive way. And history suggests that's not the case. You had on your blog this week a couple of examples as well that the industries that are ostensibly being protected by Trump's tariffs are not being protected any more than the auto industry was protected in the 70s, any more than industry was protected when the Smoot-Hawley tariff were passed in at the outset of the Great Depression.
Yeah, and then we have to look at the benefits from protectionism are concentrated on a certain industry or a certain company. And so, for example, one study showed that because of the steel and aluminum tariffs, that that's going to help support or create 33,000 jobs in the steel and aluminum producing industry. But because there's all of these companies that use steel and aluminum, including General Motors, which says that they have $1 billion increase in cost for the materials because of the tariffs. So now they're estimating that we're going to lose about 179,000 jobs throughout the rest of the U.S. economy for the companies that use steel and aluminum. So, you know, for every job we save, we lose 5 jobs. So that's the history of protectionism, is that you always lose more jobs than you save. And so it's just a formula for, you know, economic failure and job losses.
But even steel and aluminum companies in the U.S. have seen declines in market value since the tariffs were imposed.
Yeah, that's true, and so has Whirlpool. So, I mean, again, it's kind of like when you, you know, throw these, you know, barriers and distortions into global markets that have these kind of finely orchestrated global supply chains and networks of distribution, that, and it really is damaging even often for companies that are supposed to be protected. And so that's what we've even seen is some of the steel companies, aluminum companies, Whirlpool, that they haven't really done very well financially or economically, even though they're the ones that are supposed to have been benefiting from Trump's trade war.
And when do you think that this is all going to end between, you know, this tariff trade war with China?
Yeah, I mean, that's hard to predict. It looks like there's kind of this truce now. I don't know if Trump's going to back down. I don't trust him that he really has any long-term sensible economic strategy. And even the problem with Trump, you know, he's the first authentic protectionist in the White House since the 1920s, as the Wall Street Journal described him. And so even if he was able to get a world of zero tariffs and zero trade barriers, we would still have a trade deficit with the rest of the world, because that's just the nature of our economy compared to other economies. So he's still going to be complaining that we have a trade deficit and say we're getting ripped off. So even if we resolve this and move forward next year with, you know, maybe lower tariffs here and lower tariffs in China, that, you know, maybe this will work out okay, but it just seems like there's going to be a lot of long-term damage even if we can get this resolved in 2019.
How do you respond to those who say, you know, I'm a market-oriented guy, I agree with you about tariffs and which are just taxes, generally speaking, but there's no other way to impose some discipline and consequences on the Chinese for IP theft, for onboarding the technology developed by U.S. companies. And so there's got to be some repercussions for their bad faith, and this is the only way to impose those consequences.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just the logic of that is kind of flawed, because then what we're saying is we're going to punish Americans and then indirectly try to punish China or get them to, you know, act and behave better. So, but we're going to impose pain and higher cost and job losses on the American economy, hoping that in the end it somehow works out. So, you know, it just seems like if we want to deal with intellectual property theft, that we should do that in a different way, maybe through the World Trade Organization or somehow differently than punishing American consumers and American businesses with the hope that then China will somehow, you know, behave better in the future. It just doesn't seem like that's the right way to do it.
He is Mark Perry, professor of economics and finance at the University of Michigan. Sorry about that Ohio State game. Also, Carpe Diem blogger for the American Enterprise Institute. Mark, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, hey, Bill Daly released his first television ad, and I'll tell you what.
He's just like you and me. I mean, honestly, he's a man's man.
The first thing, I try to be the first one to admit when I was wrong or ignorant of something, and Bill Daly has proven with his first television ad that he has something that I didn't think he had, honestly.
What, a sweater?
A sense of humor.
Let's get real, Chicago. Crime and taxes are up. While fancy buildings rise inside the loop, families are being driven out of our neighborhoods every day. Bill Daly has spent his whole life in Chicago. It's in his blood. He knows Chicago only thrives when all our 77 neighborhoods thrive. Bill will put a moratorium on tax hikes to keep families in their homes. And he'll make getting guns and gangs off our streets priority number one. Bill Daley for mayor.
Yeah.
No more excuses.
No more excuses.
Man, he's going to put a cap. Yeah. He'll put a cap on your property taxes. Woo!
This is exciting again.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited.
Daley in 19. Don't change a thing. He's opposed to any tax increases. At the same time, he's proposing new taxes, like a commuter tax.
Yeah.
And that's on the table. Everything's on the table. It's just fun.
He's going to fight crime with a tune in the key of G.
The son of
the one and three. Yeah.
The son of Richard J. and the brother of Richard M. is your change agent, Chicago. See, that's a funny guy. He is a funny guy.
I mean, he's not going to win.
A funny, funny, funny man. I mean, I used to think that his impersonating a businessman was hysterical. I love that character he played. But this... this is good
stuff. Well, wait, is he, because I haven't seen it, is he wear a sweater? I think I saw him in a sweater. So he ditched the suit, the pinstripe suit that his signature suit.
I mean, you know.
I've never seen him without a suit on.
He's a prop comic.
I don't know what's going on
so
over there.
You're going to see a lot of different characters, a lot of different iterations. It's going to be a great show, this Chicago Mayor's Race.
And
so much fun.
Coming faster than you know. Remember, it's this February. It's only a few months away. Don't forget, if you own a business, become a business benefactor. $2,500 tax deductible. The money goes to those less fortunate. It goes to Food for the Poor. And as a way of saying thank you, we give you 40, 60-second commercials. Here's what you do. Call Anjanette. Even if you have any questions, just get it done before you head into your weekend. 847-472-8951. Dan, what is the number?
847-472-8951.
You've still got it. Okay. It's a STEM guy, huh, ladies? Yeah. STEM guy.
Yeah.
So sexy.
Yeah.
And thanks so much again for those who've already donated, and get on it.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.